And we're back here at 1180 WFYL, 6 minutes past the hour. I want to thank Michelle for coming in. That was, a great little addition to our program. You can reach her when, Susan? When is that program on?
That program is on every Thursday from 7:34 until 8 a.m.
Wonderful.
And she welcomes your phone calls. You can also email her with questions during the week at askmichelle@1180wfyl.com.
Wonderful. Well, Al, I know you wanted to make mention of a few things, so please mention away.
I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that a lot of the station has to issue a disclaimer. Not everything said here are the beliefs of the station management. We try and get good people on, but obviously there's a lot of people that are, you know, basically very competent, but they might make a mistake. And we have to, you know, caution people. Some of the news shows, for instance, they might say one agency of the federal government is really bad. Well, yeah, there are bad people in the federal government, but not all the people. The federal government has a lot of good people in it in every department, especially the Department of Defense. So we want to issue that disclaimer. Not everything said here on the radio is our opinion. You have to judge yourself a lot of times. And also, it's been my fault, really, dereliction of duty. I want to urge all our listeners to pray. You really need to pray. Our country is in, I don't want to say unprecedented danger, but I want to say that we got a lot of problems going on, a lot of issues going on, from ISIS to the Ukraine. And God is in control, but you got to ask him. Community prayer is a really essential item. We need revival. God can do it. Have faith in that. But you need to pray. And I should have mentioned this earlier. I'm bringing some of the items to your attention. But prayer, pray, pray, pray. And thank you for doing that. There's other issues. This Brian Williams thing, you just heard on Fox News at the top of the hour. As we mentioned a few days ago, only 6% of the American people, according to the MRC, believe the mainstream media is telling the whole story. So this just goes, you know, there's mistakes, honest mistakes made. Perhaps that was a case of Brian Williams. Perhaps it was a case of Hillary Clinton when she said she was under fire by snipers. But when you have an organization, professional organization like a Media Research Center, goes and documents things, it's almost too hard to say it's a mistake when they keep doing it and they do 600% more in the side of the liberal cause than they do in the side of the conservative cause. 600% is six times more. You have to say that they know what they're doing, and they're doing it intentionally. So be aware, and it looks like you are, thanks to the efforts of the Media Research Center and talk radio, including this station, that not everything is said in the mainstream media or this station. You got to filter it through and basically get use your brain logically to make decisions. I would say that Roger Hedgecock, he's streamed in the evening here now from 6 to 9. If you tune him in streaming, he's really done some brilliant work recently, and he really is clarity, and you need to, if you can, listen to him because he's putting it out there. He's doing an excellent job. We're going to go in further into the Ukrainian-American community. And I just wanted to give you some background information before we replay part of the program we taped yesterday, recorded yesterday, about the Ukrainian-American community in Montgomery County. Pennsylvania has been the home of the largest Ukrainian-American community since the 1880s. Presently, Montgomery County has one of the highest well-organized Ukrainian-American communities in the Commonwealth. Among the many community assets in the area are Manor College, St. Basile Academy, the Ukrainian Heritage Museum, Sisters of St. Basile the Great, Mother House, Spirituality Center, Chapel and Center, St. Michael Ukrainian Catholic Church, Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary Ukrainian Catholic Church, St. Sophia Religious Society, Ukrainian Educational and Cultural Center, houses over 40 social, professional, fraternal, and educational organizations that service children, youth, adults, and boasts a 19,800-book professionally staffed library, Ukrainian Federation of America, and its social service office, Ukrainian Self-Reliance Federal Credit Union, and several medical and business offices. The residents of Montgomery County are well-informed and highly organized community activists and participants. The Federation members and volunteers, for the most part, residents of Montgomery County, and the growing new immigrant population is gravitating to this area because of the varied community institutions and quality of life. Somewhere here it says 20,000 Ukrainians immigrated to the Philadelphia area in the not-too-distant past. And we're going to go again this Saturday. We're going to replay. I'm not sure when Susan's going to schedule that, but we're going to have live where you can call in and talk to Roman and
Irene.
Irene, basically from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. So, Andrew, that's about all I had.
Right. Yeah, we have some. We have that interview up here. We just wanted to make sure you heard it. So we're going to play parts of it again.
Well, Susan has a letter too.
Could I just
sure, absolutely,
one,
please
one
do,
Andrew. Thank you. Irene gave me a copy yesterday of a letter that a number of senators signed to President Obama, and this was just 2 days ago, February 3rd. It was directed to him with grave concern over escalating Russian aggression in Ukraine. We urge the U.S. and NATO to rapidly increase military assistance to Ukraine to allow it to defend its sovereign borders. And the letter goes on. I won't read the entire thing. But I just mentioned that yesterday they said they're not asking for American troops to come in there. What they're asking for is some assistance with weaponry and so forth. So just, you know, supplies and... at the end of it, well, it says, working with our NATO allies, the United States must implement a comprehensive strategy to support Ukraine, deter Russian aggression, and help maintain stability in the region. Unfortunately, sanctions alone are unlikely to deter Putin. As such, Ukraine needs an immediate infusion of effective defensive military equipment and financial aid to thwart Putin's naked aggression. Defensive military assistance, such as anti-tank weapons, counter-battery radars, armored Humvees, and increased training, are all critical to ensuring Ukraine has the capabilities to defend its territory and its citizens. As Ukrainian Finance Minister Natalie Jaresko recently said, Putin fears a Ukraine that demands to live and wants to live and insists on living on European values, with a robust civil society and freedom of speech and relation, and with the system of values the Ukrainian people have chosen and lay down their lives for, unquote. We must help her and her fellow Ukrainians succeed. The bipartisan Ukraine Freedom Support Act, which passed the Congress in December, authorized tighter sanctions and such military equipment. We urge you to take steps without delay. In other words, this act was passed back in December.
Signed by the president.
And signed by him, but nothing has been done yet. This letter is signed by 15 senators.
Right, which is, when we were reading it yesterday, I was like, well, that's not enough.
I'm not sure if they were just on
the majority
on the
of
committee.
It
I'm not sure.
Signed on when they passed the bill.
Right. This is just a reminder to him that actually.
But it comes to mind when... President Obama was over there on the stage with Putin. He leaned over to him and said, essentially, I can do more after the election. He forgot his mic was on. I can do more after the election. In other words, the best interests of the United States might not be President Obama's best interests. I'm just saying right out there that... we want weapons to be given to the Ukrainians, And basically, that's in the best interest of the United States. It's a critical, vital area, and we need, it's already been signed off on, and, you know, for President Obama to hesitate in this particular area, when you just heard a letter by the 15 senators, is unconscionable. We want action. General Leslie Clark was on the news. Many, many generals are asking for aid for the Ukraine. A million people have been displaced. 5,000 people have died. Putin will do whatever he can get away with, and we need to draw the line that he shouldn't be able to get away with it anymore.
I fully agree with that, and in fact, we do have to go to a commercial break. But I believe when we get back, we're going to play some of the meat for you guys. It'll bring us in. Susan gives a nice brief introduction for Irene and Roman and some of their backgrounds, and then we go on to discuss the issues that are plaguing the Ukraine at the moment. And again, we're going to be playing some of this now. However, they both will be back in our studios this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. So please listen in back to 1180 a.m. At that time. You can also catch us streaming online at info@1180wfyl.com. And this will all be made available to you as well in podcast form on our website in due time. So we're going to head to a commercial break, but we will be right back. Stay right there. Welcome back to It's a New Day here at 1180 WFYL, 5 minutes past the hour. And again, as I said, it's about 6 minutes past the hour. As we've been previewing for you our whole show, pretty much, we have two very special guests in our studio at the moment. I'm going to pass things off to Susan, who's going to give us a little rundown of what's going on. Susan?
Thank you, Andrew. Indeed, we do. We're delighted to have two very special guests with us this morning. Irene Mazur is from Huntington Valley. She and her husband are both trained and attorneys. Irene is not practicing right now. She is devoting her time to work regarding Ukraine and the Ukrainian people, helping them. At present, she is the director of advocacy and information program of the Ukrainian Federation of America. Now, our other guest is Roman Andrejczyk, a neighbor right here in West Norriton, an authority on Ukraine. He is a Ukrainian-American citizen with a marvelously varied background, a very accomplished person. Both of them have a wealth of information to share with us today about Ukraine. We're so glad to have you. We welcome you. Thank you very much. I would like to start with you, Roman. This morning we were reading in Romans, "Therefore, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." You have in your background people who ran that race and are an inspiration to you, and I know will be an inspiration to our listeners. I wonder if you could share with us a little bit about that.
Sure. First of all, I want to take the opportunity to thank you very much for inviting us and for us to be able to share with you what we know, the knowledge in terms of what's going on in the world, especially in Ukraine. Very briefly, I was born in Ukraine. My parents left when I was 3 years old. I grew up, most of my life I spent in the United States. Went to college at Penn State, and spent a good part of my life working for aerospace industry and the U.S. military, a total of 26 years in the Army, and I'm retired, both reserve and active duty. My my grand-grandparents on both sides and my grandparents on both sides, my grandfathers, were Catholic priests. In Ukraine, the Catholic priests are allowed to be married prior to being ordained. One of the things I want to bring up especially is my father's father was arrested for being a Ukrainian Catholic priest, and a patriot of Ukraine was tortured and executed. So this is the problem we always had, having Russia as a neighbor for hundreds of years, and it's still continuing today. Thank you.
I just might add here that Roman is a retired colonel in the U.S. military and basically went through Army warfare school and very accomplished gentleman.
And Roman, we thank you for that service as well.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Roman, very much. We know you also worked with Lockheed Martin and General Electric.
Yes, I did.
For many years,
yes,
you've had quite an accomplished career.
Right.
But that's not really the reason you're here today. You wanted to share with us about Ukrainian situation. Irene, I'd like to turn the microphone over to you and let you tell the listeners a little bit about your work for Ukraine right now.
Well, thank you, Susan. Thank you for inviting me here. It's a great honor to be here and to talk, actually, to my fellow Americans to about real situation of what is going on in Ukraine. I was born in Ukraine and immigrated into the United States about 14 years ago. I became a United States citizen, went to Temple Law School, graduated. As you correctly stated, I work closely with the Ukrainian community, specifically with Ukrainian nonprofit organizations such as Ukrainian Federation of America, New Ukrainian Wave, Association of Ukrainians Abroad called Razum. It's a new organization. I work between the Ukrainian mission at the UN, Ukrainian embassy, and our New York General Consul General. We combine our efforts in the struggle against that Russian aggression. I am actually really happy to be here today because this is a chance for me to actually provide it really detailed information to regular people what is going on in Ukraine, not simply what is written in the newspapers, what is written in all those reports, but perhaps I would give you some examples of what I experience in conversations with, when I talk with other people, with volunteers in Ukraine, with people who are actually having firsthand knowledge about what is going on.
Mm, absolutely. So just to give a little background of, you know, what's been going on, this isn't the first kind of, you know, as you mentioned, Roman, you know, there's been, you mentioned having Russia as a neighbor for 100 years. You know, this is the kind of things that you have seen. And we can go back as far as 1992 when we have, you know, talking about Moldova, Chechnya in 94 through 96. Georgia, I think most people remember, almost removed Russia from the Olympics that year. And I think that was the big story there, but it wasn't necessarily what was going on in Georgia. I remember watching reporters on the ground in Georgia talking, you know, doing interviews with gunfire in the background. And that was, you know, when I was in high school. And then just as recently as 2014, when the annex of Crimea. So this is not something that is new. However, it is something that has fallen out of the world view, as you mentioned. I mean, you know, it's something, or at least in our American media, it's not something that is heavily talked about every day. And we want to make that change.
Well, can I respond to this
question? Sure, absolutely.
Well, actually, it's good that you noticed from the standpoint of modern history. However, we have a long time, 100 years of history of Russian aggression, suppression of Ukrainian culture, Ukrainian traditions. The most horrible example of that suppression, we had three genocides in 20s and 30s and after the Second Great War. Millions of Ukrainians, it is estimated that about 12 million Ukrainians were starved to death. And it was the most horrible horrible tragedy of the 20th century. It is still not recognized by the entire world as a genocide. However, United States did recognize it as a genocide against the Ukrainian nation. If you look into the modern history, yes, unfortunately, Russia is not the best neighboring country to have, and the policy that they engage actually shows that they really would like to resurrect the style and regime of Soviet Union as it was before. And if you would look into the invasion of Georgia in 2008, you could actually see that Russia pulled the same trick which they are pulling in Ukraine right now. Under the false pretext that Russian-speaking population of Georgia are persecuted by Georgian government, Russia moved their troops. However, Georgians, they didn't have enough, I would say, patience, and they responded into Russian provocations with military force, which allowed Russia to move their troops in. What distinguished Ukraine in the struggle with Russia during 2014, Ukraine was actually holding off because Ukraine didn't want to repeat Georgian mistake. Some people criticized Ukrainian government that they were not proactive enough into defending invasion of Crimea and moving Russian troops into the eastern provinces. But Ukraine wanted to show that there is that Ukraine stands for democracy, for peaceful resolutions. Unfortunately, such decisions were paid by human lives, but Ukrainian government wanted to show that they do not go to the level of the Russian politic.
I think that's a very interesting point. Welcome back to It's a New Day here at 1180 WFYL. We're going to get right back into the interview that we were playing from yesterday with some really good information. You can should continue to listen to that, but we do want to make some notable mentions before then. Al?
We have some breaking news here on the Ukraine crisis, what we're focusing on this morning. European leaders are going to the Ukraine for a new peace bid. French president and the German chancellor are going there, and they're basically hopefully going to resolve this before it goes to the next level. Secretary of State John Kerry for the U.S. already landed there, and on Friday they're going to meet with Putin. So keep praying, start praying if you haven't, because this is big. This is Russia. This is a huge, this is how world wars start. So we definitely don't want that to happen. And the Russian premier is that kind of mindset. So we need to try and alleviate this. So pray. That's the best course in my mind.
Yeah, it's good to hear that they're headed there to take a look at that. I know we've had some folks that are close with the station here even go over to take a look. And try to help with what is going on. So I think we're going to continue to play the interview from yesterday. It's filled with great information. The first segment that we just played for you is pretty much filled with a lot of, introductions and getting to know it a little bit better. I think at some point here, too, it will go to a commercial, but it'll cut right back into it. So please just stay with us here and listen to a wonderful interview again from yesterday's program.
Human lives, but Ukrainian government wanted to show that they do not go to the level of the Russian politic.
I think that's a very interesting point because I don't think that's a narrative that is has arrived in the U.S. media. It is seen as an overtaking rather than a steadfast resolution. Roman, your thoughts on that? We've got about 2 minutes before we head to commercial break, but
sure.
we'll be able to talk about this more.
I just want to add a little bit more to that. Prior to Georgia, as you know, Russia has about 10,000 troops or so in Transnistria, which is in Moldova. And they have had those troops for a long time, also with the pretest that there is a Russian population, a Russian-speaking population that really want to be Russians and so forth. So strategically, if you look at the map, what they're doing right now with Crimea, where they're there in Moldova, where they are in Georgia, and what they're trying to do is create a corridor through Mariupol, which is heard in the news about a week or so ago, bombardment killing a lot of innocent people. They're trying to create a corridor around the Black Sea. They would control good portion of it all the way. Even the Romanians are already worried about that, and the Bulgarians. If you look at the map, you'll see that.
And I think what most people understand that corridor is kind of like a pincer movement, right? Definitely. So if you can imagine your fingers going to grab something, you know, you move around the edges to get a front, and then you move backwards through. And that would place Ukrainians right in the crosshairs of what they're trying to do. We have a lot more to discuss. We definitely want to keep talking about this. So we do have to head to a commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking more with Irene and Roman about what can be done, what is still happening, you know, a little bit more details, and maybe some facts about Ukrainians in the U.S. as well. So as I said, we will be right back. So stay right there. You definitely don't want to miss the rest of what we're talking about today. So stay right there. Welcome back to It's a New Day here at 1180 WFYL. We are truly blessed to have such a wonderful interview in our studio at the moment. We are talking to Roman and Irene here. They are experts on what is going on in Ukraine at the moment. And even, I would say, as Irene pointed out and Roman pointed out in the first segment, modern history as well as a little bit further back than that as well, of all things that have happened between Russia and Ukraine in recent history, as well as, you know, as I mentioned, further back from that. So let's dive into a little bit more of, you know, what is exactly happening right now. We mentioned a little bit of some of the tactics that are being used. And Roman, maybe I'll direct this question at you first, but this I believe echoes more of what has happened in the 30s and 40s with Hitler and the Nazis. Is this something that we've seen before? Is this a tactic that is used time and time again?
Absolutely. If you look back in history, with the Nazis, where initially was annexing the area of the Czech Republic now in pretense that they're a German population, and this is the Russians doing that in Moldova, in Georgia, and now in Ukraine. This is the normal tactic. They, at this time, they're not going out on the full war. They're trying to instigate things and see how that can get settled. If that doesn't go that way, they go a little bit further until eventually, if need be, they will go to a full war and try to invade Ukraine, which I think is their ultimate goal. So this is something that the Russian aggression destabilizes the world order and also at the same time threatens especially Europe, and trying to bring it back to what the old Soviet Union was. If you remember, Putin several years ago made a remark that the biggest strategy of the 20th century was the fall of the Soviet Empire. And I think in his mind, I'm pretty sure in his mind that that's exactly what he wants to do, is bring back the glory of the Soviet Union under the Russian banner. So this is what's happening, and I think the world, especially the Western world, has to put a stop to it, because especially Europe, where they're threatened the most, and there are several actions that have been going on throughout. We can discuss that a little bit more in detail. The United States is taking, Europe is taking, through the different sanctions, through the different resolutions in Congress and so forth.
So maybe I'll pass that to you, Irene. Why is Europe so slow on the pull to take action in Ukraine?
Oh, well, can you please elaborate what you mean, why we are so slow?
So
who are we? What do you mean?
Right. No, well, not necessarily we, but we'll get into the U.S., I think, in a few minutes. But I would think to the rest of the world, it would seem as though the direct stakeholders for something that you are both describing would be Eastern Europe. And is there anything being done in order to stop Putin's advances in Ukraine?
Well, here's the situation. If people take Europe and the United States as two separate entities, we have Germany, France, and Italy in Europe as the most vocal parties. And unfortunately, during the last 20 years, I would say, they became extremely financially tied and economically tied with Russia. So I wouldn't call them friends of Ukraine. And I would say that they're not our friends, they're not Ukrainian friends at all, because during the entire 2014, all the diplomatic actions, negotiations, and tactics which were used, they were useless. The only things that actually worked, it was a drop of price of oil, because the Russian economy is actually very shallow, and that's what actually keeps them on top. It's the price of oil. Unfortunately, they supply oil through the European countries. Those economic ties, they do not allow France, Germany, and I would say Italy to be honest on the international political arena. United States, Canada, and Japan, I would say they are Ukrainian friends, first because they are not dependent on the Russian oil. They don't have so much economic ties. And also, I would say that United States, the strongest country in the NATO. And NATO was created as counterplay to the Russian, to the Soviet regime. And that's why I would say the only country which actually would have the most value on the political arena, that would be the United States, to actually help Ukraine. Because if you would ask me, I would say the Europe, they would stay very very weak in their position to defend Ukraine.
I would like to add a little bit to that.
Please.
And I'll be a little bit critical of Europe itself, even though I was born in Europe. But if you look historically, Europe, each individual country in Europe has never been really aggressive enough to be able to come to the defense of other countries in general. The only thing they do is when the country is directly attacked, then they take some action. You look historically, that's exactly what has been happening. And today, Europeans are no different. They need some sort of a leadership and the only people that can provide leadership are the Americans. The United States has the power and needs to provide the leadership, which I think is lacking, but that's another issue we can discuss later. But so we cannot depend on Europeans. Like Irene mentioned, yes, they're tied very heavily economically, and yes, that's for them it's a bigger burden than for the United States. But sooner or later, they're the ones being threatened, like I mentioned before. Mm. And they should take some action and be more proactive in what's happening in their own backyard.
So I know there was demonstrations that were broadcast worldwide in Ukraine recently. You know, over the past few years, you've seen them happen more and more. I believe one of the major events that had happened was the Orange Revolution, as it's known, in 2004. We know it in media as one of the first times that social media was used in order to schedule protests and a lot of... Welcome back to It's a New Day here at 1180 WFYL. Listening to the interview that we had yesterday, really bringing up some good topics for discussion. Al, you wanted to make mention of something?
Yes, at the end of the interview yesterday, we mentioned that, in my opinion, that it would be good to get the Ukrainian Catholic Church leadership and the Russian Orthodox Church leadership together, and perhaps they could mediate a solution. Russia has enough land, enough resources. It would seem like the Ukrainians might be able to barter something. Russia, in a way, major way, needs access to the Black Sea. So they need something needs to be done. I hate for Ukrainian Christians, to be killing Russian Christians. Premier Putin is seems to be differential to the Russian Orthodox Church, which is traditionally in Russia one of the strongest institutions. And this would be, now, the immediate response was from the knowledgeable people here was that the Russian Orthodox Church only has leadership of appointed people who are very, very loyal to the regime. And undoubtedly that's a case. But sometimes when put in a spotlight like that and on the world stage, they'll do what Christ wants them to do. What Christ wants them to do. And Christ, I'm sure, is pained by this conflict. And we all need to pray about it. And hopefully Christ will intervene and and minimize the killing before we start providing weapons of significant power and escalate the conflict more. I don't think anybody really wants that. And the Premier of Germany and Chancellor of Germany and President of France are over there now, and Secretary of State Kerry. Let's all pray and hope that this will be alleviated by negotiations.
Yes, thank you very much, Al. And that's something that Roman was talking to us a little bit about yesterday. Hopefully we can bring up more of that discussion on Saturday. But I'm going to let you listen to more of our interview today. And remember, Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, we will be playing the interview, or we will be interviewing again the folks that you're about to hear from, Roman and Irene, who are experts on the Ukraine. I would say 100%. I mean, they both have been there. They've been there multiple times over the past few months, and they are both actively trying to seek help for their homeland. So we'll go back and we'll play some of this interview for you. All right.
I know there was demonstrations that were broadcast worldwide in Ukraine recently. You know, over the past few years, you've seen them happen more and more, and I believe one of the major events that had happened was the Orange Revolution, as it's known, in 2004. We know it in media as one of the first times that social media was used in order to schedule protests, and a lot of would recommend that that would maybe be one of the reasons why it was so successful. Irene, I want your thoughts on where the Ukrainian people stand on things that are going on. And we do have 2 minutes, but we'll pick this conversation up right where we left off when we come back from that. But your thoughts to take us to the break.
Well, I want to really assure you and our listeners that there is no civil war in Ukraine. Mm. What actually happened, Russian invasion on Ukraine started not only last year, but I would say approximately 10 years ago, when pro-Russian president, former president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, came to power, who was actually twice convict. He was convicted two times, and he had no relation to the big politic, and he came to power simply through the connections through Russian and authorities and all kind of using inappropriate methods. Mm-hmm. So he came to power. He actually killed, he and his family, people close to his family, they killed, I would say, small and middle business in Ukraine, because everything was basically taken forcefully from people who had just become businessmen, who started their businesses, developed their businesses. They went around the world. They learned a little bit. They started to grow their businesses, and was sort of shut down. And Ukraine was brought to the bad economic condition at that point because of the bad economic relationship with Russia, which were imposed by Russia.
Yeah, I just want to add a comment to that. Also, Yanukovych, this was a plan from the very beginning with Russia, and this is to basically disarm and demoralize the Ukrainian military, and that's why it's such a sorry state today, where the military is lacking training, is lacking leadership, and weapons. And this was
correct,
a plan
yes.
from the very beginning, and that's the problem today. And Ukrainian military needs a lot of help from that point of view. Yanukovych had a lot to do with that.
Well, we certainly have more to talk about. I'm getting actually lots of texts in for questions and things like that for people that are listening. So maybe we'll address them in our next half hour. But we will be right back with more on the Ukrainian situation. So stay right there for me. Back to It's a New Day, 34 minutes past the hour. Remember to give us a call in at 610-539-8255. We do have some questions coming in. We're going to get to those in a few minutes. But, Irene, I wanted to pick up where you were kind of taking us there as to, you know, where what has been going on in the Ukraine. We kind of gave a brief overview of history and some of the things that have happened, but specifically with the corruption within the government in Ukraine. So why don't you continue what we were discussing before?
Well, unfortunately, during last several years, the controlling party was a party of regions, which was sponsored and controlled by Russia. One of the key leaders of the party, Medvedchuk, he is a person who is closely related to Putin. He's actually, Putin is, I believe, godfather of his daughter. So they have personal close relation. Ukraine was tied and choked economically because it was forced into very bad economical gas contracts with Russia. There was a huge scandal with the former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko, who went to prison for several years over those gas contracts. And basically that way, Ukrainian economy, Ukrainian army, Ukrainian system, I would say it just became completely destroyed. People got tired of such a situation because they had a chance, and the chance came up very successfully after the Orange Revolution, and it was shut down. So they were fed up with such a state of affairs, and they came to Maidan. Maidan, it's a central square in Kyiv. Mm-hmm. And in November last year, they started protests, and I can assure you that protests were very peaceful. Unfortunately, the former president, he used power against those protesters, including there were snipers mm-hmm. who were shooting at people, and there were a lot of Ukrainians who were killed, injured in Maidan, and that was the most inhumane, cruel, and improper treatment of expression of freedom. Mm-hmm. And right to free speech, right to gather, right to, because under the Constitution of Ukraine, people, they hold the power to govern. So the president, he is not a tsar, like mm-hmm. it is traditionally in Russia.
Right.
He is the senior executive.
Anyway, welcome back to It's a New Day here at 1180 WFYL. That was an interview that we were playing from yesterday, filled with good information. We wanted to make sure that we played some of that again for you today, just as a preface to our interview again on this coming Saturday. We're going to have a few of those guys back in. In fact, it sounds like Roman's wife will be here as well. So we have three different takes on the crisis going on right now in Ukraine. So we're very hopeful for that. Hopefully something gets resolved. Hopeful that we can be the ones that help do that, turn things around. So tune in this Saturday from 11 to 12, where we will have an interview going over more things that we clearly couldn't get to yesterday, even with, talking with Irene and Roman for almost an hour. So from all of us here in the studio, I'd like to thank Michelle for coming in today. You can catch her next Thursday from 7:30 to 4 to about 8 o'clock. And from all of us here in the studio at 1180 WFYL, we'd like to thank you for listening. And remember to catch us streaming online at 1180WFYL.com. And as always, please, please stay informed. Have a good day.